Chapter 23. If Joseph Willett, the denounced and proscribed of prentices, had happened to be at home when his father's courtly guest presented himself before the maple door, that is, if it had not perversely chanced to be one of the half dozen days in the whole year on which he was at liberty to absent himself for as many hours without question or approach, he would have contrived, by hook or crook, to dive to the very bottom of Mr. Chester's mystery, and to come at his purpose with as much certainty as though he had been his confidential adviser. In that fortunate case, the lovers would have had quick warning of the ills that threatened them, and the aid of various timely and wise suggestions to boot. For all Joe's readiness of thought and action, and all his sympathies and good wishes, were enlisted in favor of the young people, and were staunch in devotion to their cause. Whether this disposition arose out of his old prepossessions in favor of the young lady, whose history had surrounded her in his mind, almost from his cradle, with circumstances of unusual interest, or from his attachment towards the young gentleman, into whose confidence he had, through his shrewdness and alacrity, and the rendering of sundry important services as a spy and messenger, almost imperceptibly glided, whether they had their origin in either of these sources, or in the habit natural to youth, or in the constant badgering and worrying of his venerable parent, or in any hidden little love affair of his own which gave him something of a fellow feeling in the matter, it is needless to inquire, especially as Joe was out of the way, and had no opportunity on that particular occasion of testifying to his sentiments either on one side or the other. It was, in fact, the 25th of March, which, as most people know to their cost, is, and has been time out of mind, one of those unpleasant epochs termed quarter days. On this 25th of March, it was John Willett's pride annually to settle, in hard cash, his account with a certain vintner and distiller in the city of London, to give into whose hands a canvas bag containing its exact amount, and not a penny more or less, was the end and object of a journey for Joe, so surely as the year and day came round. This journey was performed upon an old gray mare, concerning whom John had an indistinct set of ideas hovering about him, to the effect that she could win a plate or cup if she tried. She never had tried, and probably never would now, being some 14 or 15 years of age, short in wind, long in body, and rather the worse for wear in respect of her mane and tail. Notwithstanding these slight defects, John perfectly gloried in the animal, and when she was brought round to the door by Hugh, actually retired into the bar, and there, in a secret grove of lemons, laughed with pride. "There's a bit of horse flesh, Hugh." Said John, when he had recovered enough self-command to appear at the door again. "There's a comely creature. There's high mettle. There's bone." There was bone enough beyond all doubt, and so Hugh seemed to think, as he sat sideways in the saddle, lazily doubled up with his chin nearly touching his knees, and heedless of the dangling stirrups and loose bridle rein, sauntered up and down on the little green before the door. "Mind you take good care of her, sir," said John, appealing from this insensible person to his son and heir, who now appeared, fully equipped and ready. "Don't you ride hard." "I should be puzzled to do that, I think, father," Joe replied, casting a disconsolate look at the animal. "None of your impudence, sir, if you please," retorted old John. "What would you ride, sir? A wild ass or zebra would be too tame for you, wouldn't he, eh, sir? You'd like to ride a roaring lion, wouldn't you, sir, eh, sir? Hold your tongue, sir." When Mr. Willett, in his differences with his son, had exhausted all the questions that occurred to him, and Joe had said nothing at all in answer, he generally wound up by bidding him hold his tongue. "And what does the boy mean?" added Mr. Willett, after he had stared at him for a little time, in a species of stupefaction, by cocking his hat, to such an extent. "Are you going to kill the winner, sir?" "No," said Joe, tartly, I'm not. Now your mind's at ease, father. Apostrophe, with a military air to. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Willett, surveying him from top to toe, with a swaggering, fire-eating, boiling water-drinking sort of way with him. And what do you mean, by pulling up the crocuses and snowdrops, eh, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's only a little nosegay, apostrophe, said Joe, reddening. There's no harm in that, I hope. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you're a boy of business, you are, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Willett, disdainfully, to go supposing that winners care for nosegays. Apostrophe, I don't suppose anything of the kind, apostrophe, returned Joe. Let them keep their red noses for bottles and tankards. These are going to Mr. Varden's house. Apostrophe, and do you suppose he minds such things as crocuses? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded John. I don't know, and to say the truth, I don't care, apostrophe, said Joe. Come, father, give me the money, and in the name of patience let me go. Apostrophe, there it is, sir, apostrophe, replied John, and take care of it, and mind you don't make too much haste back, but give the mare a long rest. Do you mind? Apostrophe, apostrophe, eh, I mind, apostrophe, returned Joe. She'll need it, heaven knows. Apostrophe, and don't you score up too much at the Black Lion, apostrophe, said John. Mind that too. Apostrophe, then why don't you let me have some money of my own? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Joe, sorrowfully. Why don't you, father? What do you send me into London for, giving me only the right to call for my dinner at the Black Lion, which you're to pay for next time you go, as if I was not to be trusted with a few shillings? Why do you use me like this? It's not right of you. You can't expect me to be quiet under it. Apostrophe, let him have money. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried John, in a drowsy reverie. What does he call money guineas? Hasn't he got money? Over and above the tolls, hasn't he 1 and 6 pence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, 1 and 6 pence. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated his son contemptuously. Yes, sir, apostrophe, returned John, 1 and 6 pence. When I was your age, I had never seen so much money, in a heap. A shilling of it is in case of accidents the mare casting a shoe, or the like of that. The other 6 pence is to spend in the diversions of London, and the diversion I recommend is going to the top of the monument, and sitting there. There's no temptation there, sir, no drink, no young women, no bad characters of any sort, nothing but imagination. That's the way I enjoyed myself when I was your age, sir. Apostrophe, to this, Joe made no answer, but beckoning Hugh, leaped into the saddle and rode away, and a very stalwart manly horseman he looked, deserving a better charger than it was his fortune to bestride. John stood staring after him, or rather after the gray mare, for he had no eyes for a rider, until man and beast had been out of sight some 20 minutes, when he began to think they were gone, and slowly re-entering the house, fell into a gentle doze. The unfortunate gray mare, who was the agony of Joe's life, floundered along at her own will and pleasure until the maypole was no longer visible, and then, contracting her legs into what in a puppet would have been looked upon as a clumsy and awkward imitation of a canter, mended her pace all at once, and did it of her own accord. The acquaintance with her rider's usual mode of proceeding, which suggested this improvement in hers, impelled her likewise to turn up a byway, leading not to London, but through lanes running parallel with the road they had come, and passing within a few hundred yards of the maypole, which led finally to an enclosure surrounding a large old red brick mansion, the same of which mention was made as the warren in the first chapter of this history. Coming to a dead stop in a little copse thereabout, she suffered her rider to dismount with right goodwill, and to tie her to the trunk of a tree. Stay there, old girl, apostrophe, said Joe, and let us see whether there's any little commission for me today. apostrophe so saying, he left her to browse upon such stunted grass, and weeds as happened to grow within the length of her tether, and passing through a wicket gate, entered the grounds on foot. The pathway, after a very few minutes walking, brought him close to the house, towards which, and especially towards one particular window, he directed many covert glances. It was a dreary, silent building, with echoing courtyards, desolated turret chambers, and whole suites of rooms shut up and mouldering to ruin. The terrace garden, dark with the shade of overhanging trees, had an air of melancholy that was quite oppressive. Great iron gates, disused for many years, and red with rust, drooping on their hinges and overgrown with long rank grass, seemed as though they tried to sink into the ground, and hide their fallen state among the friendly weeds. The fantastic monsters on the walls, green with age and damp, and covered here and there with moss, looked grim and desolate. There was a somber aspect even on that part of the mansion which was inhabited and kept in good repair, that struck the beholder with a sense of sadness, of something forlorn and failing, whence cheerfulness was banished. It would have been difficult to imagine a bright fire blazing in the dull and darkened rooms, or to picture any gaiety of heart or revelry that the frowning walls shut in. It seemed a place where such things had been, but could be no more the very ghost of a house, haunting the old spot in its old outward form, and that was all. Much of this decayed and somber look was attributable, no doubt, to the death of its former master, and the temper of its present occupant. But remembering the tale connected with the mansion, it seemed the very place for such a deed, and one that might have been its predestined theater years upon years ago. Viewed with reference to this legend, the sheet of water, where the steward's body had been found appeared to wear a black and sullen character, such as no other pool might own. The bell upon the roof, that had told the tale of murder to the midnight wind, became a very phantom whose voice would raise the listener's hair on end. And every leafless bough, that nodded to another, had its stealthy whispering of the crime. Joe paced up and down the path, sometimes stopping in affected contemplation of the building or the prospect, sometimes leaning against a tree with an assumed air of idleness and indifference, but always keeping an eye upon the window he had singled out at first. After some quarter of an hour's delay, a small white hand was waved to him for an instant from this casement, and the young man, with a respectful bow, departed, saying under his breath as he crossed his horse again, "No errand for me today." Apostrophe, apostrophe, but the air of smartness, the cock of the hat to which John Willet had objected, and the spring nosegay, all betokened some little errand of his own, having a more interesting object than a vintner, or even a locksmith. So, indeed, it turned out. For when he had settled with the vintner whose place of business was down in some deep cellars hard by Thames Street, and who was as purple-faced an old gentleman, as if he had all his life supported their arched roof on his head, when he had settled the account, and taken the receipt, and declined tasting more than three glasses of old sherry, to the unbounded astonishment of the purple-faced vintner, who, gimlet in hand, had projected an attack upon at least a score of moldy casks, and who stood transfixed, or morally gimleted as it were, to his own wall, when he had done all this, and disposed besides of a frugal dinner, at the Black Lion in Whitechapel. Spurning the monument and John's advice, he turned his steps towards the locksmith's house, attracted by the eyes of blooming Dolly Varden. Joe was by no means a sheepish fellow, but, for all that, when he got to the corner of the street in which the locksmith lived, he could by no means make up his mind to walk straight to the house. First, he resolved to stroll up another street for 5 minutes, then up another street for 5 minutes more, and so on until he had lost full half an hour, when he made a bold plunge, and found himself with a red face, and a beating heart in the smoky workshop. Joe Willet, or his ghost. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Varden, rising from the desk at which he was busy with his books, and looking at him under his spectacles. Which is it? Joe in the flesh, eh? That's Artie. And how are all the Chigwell company, Joe? Apostrophe apostrophe, much as usual, sir, they and I agree as well as ever. Apostrophe, well, well. Apostrophe apostrophe, said the locksmith. We must be patient, Joe, and bear with old folks' foibles. How's the mare, Joe? Does she do the 4 miles an hour as easily as ever? Ha, ha, ha. Does she, Joe? Eh? What have we there, Joe? A nosegay. Apostrophe, a very poor one, sir. I thought Miss Dolly apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, said Gabriel, dropping his voice, and shaking his head, not Dolly. Give 'em to her mother, Joe. A great deal better give 'em to her mother. Would you mind giving 'em to Mrs. Varden, Joe? Apostrophe, oh no, sir, apostrophe, Joe replied, and endeavoring, but not with the greatest possible success, to hide his disappointment. I shall be very glad, I'm sure. Apostrophe, that's right, apostrophe, said the locksmith, patting him on the back. It don't matter who has 'em, Joe. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not a bit, sir. Apostrophe, dear heart, how the word stuck in his throat. Come in, apostrophe, said Gabriel. I have just been called to tea. She's in the parlor. Apostrophe, she, apostrophe, thought Joe. Which of 'em, I wonder, Mrs. or Miss? Apostrophe, the locksmith settled the doubt as neatly as if it had been expressed aloud, by leading him to the door, and saying, Martha, my dear, here's young Mr. Willett. Apostrophe, now, Mrs. Varden, regarding the maypole as a sort of human man-trap, or decoy for husbands, viewing its proprietor, and all who aided and abetted him, in the light of so many poachers among Christian men, and believing, moreover, that the publicans coupled with sinners in Holy Writ were veritable licensed victualers, was far from being favorably disposed towards her visitor. Wherefore she was taken faint directly, and being duly presented with the crocuses and snowdrops, divined on further consideration that they were the occasion of the languor which had seized upon her spirits. I'm afraid I couldn't bear the room another minute, apostrophe, said the good lady, if they remained here. Would you excuse my putting them out of window? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Joe begged she wouldn't mention it on any account, and smiled feebly as he saw them deposited on the sill outside. If anybody could have known the pains he had taken to make up that despised and misused bunch of flowers. I feel it quite a relief to get rid of them, I assure you, apostrophe, said Mrs. Varden. I'm better already. Apostrophe, and indeed she did appear to have plucked up her spirits. Joe expressed his gratitude to Providence for this favorable dispensation, and tried to look as if he didn't wonder where Dolly was. Your sad people at Chigwell, Mr. Joseph, apostrophe, said Mrs. Five. I hope not, ma'am, apostrophe, returned Joe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.